listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys over here to my right. I've got Martin Page.
How you doing, Mike?
And next to him, I've got Scott Gershon.
How you doing there, Mike?
And next to him, actually across the table, we've got Andrew Sheps.
Hi, Mike.
And next to me over here on my left, we've got Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
Rob Arbiter is back for the second show without drugs.
That is true. As far as you know, that's true.
Yeah. So you know what that means. That means he's going to be even more funnier than last time.
Oh, is that possible?
Before we get going, I just want to introduce you guys to our guests today. We have Summer Watson. Summer, welcome to the Audio Nowcast.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, but before we get into that, we need to talk about the Grammys. And I don't know about you, but I'm not going to say that I kind of feel ripped off, but I kind of feel ripped off, you know, because Andrew, why don't you, you know, how was that, Andrew? Mm-hmm. I will say that your album that you mixed, Stadium Arcadia, for me, was definitely the best album.
I agree.
Year.
We all agree.
Well, yeah. Now, are you all members of NARIS? Did you all vote?
No, but really, I bet that was just a fantastic experience.
It was pretty amazing. I mean, it was a very, very long day. So just the incredibly brief recap is, if for anyone who watched the broadcast, they give out 12 awards during the broadcast, and that's 3.5 hours. Of course, that leaves 97 Grammys to give out, which they do in an hour and a half earlier that day.
And were you there for all of them?
Yes. Well, not all of them. We showed up a little bit late to that ceremony, and we left a little early to get over to the Staples Center because it's well, that'll be an edit. Let me turn this off.
No, somebody's... actually, that's saying that you have won the award.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh,
there's been a recount.
There's been a recount. They messed up.
So I was a little late for the pre-telecast, and we left early to get over to the Staples Center. But basically, they give out 97 Grammys in an hour and a half, and it's...
Wait, so they give it out in two different places?
Yeah, it's two different places.
Where was
it's
the other
one? In the convention center in the West Hall. So, I mean, it's right across the street. But... that one, it's a massive room with just chairs everywhere, and there are lots of people sitting down. And then there's a stage with a band and a projector, and it's just one category after another. So it's now the nominees in the blah, blah, blah category. Bam, 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 bam. And immediately the guy's like, okay, and the Grammy goes too. And then the band starts playing, and if you're not sprinting towards the stage within about 5 seconds, they say, and the Academy will gladly accept this for them. Thank you very much. And then you're on to the next category.
So basically you stepped in like during, you know, Best Polka, and you left during, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. And you can see why some people don't go to that, because like Rick Rubin won Producer of the Year, which is great and I think very well deserved, but he's sandwiched in between the polka – no, I'm sorry, between the children's albums and the spoken word.
Wow.
That's and Producer of the Year?
Yeah, so Producer of the Year is just sort of in the middle there.
It's hard to believe Producer of the Year isn't one of the big ones, actually.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was, but the last time they gave it out during the telecast was Daniel Lanois won it. And was on stage for a little while, and I think they just decided. Because, I mean, if they're only going to give out 12, you know, I don't know how they decide.
It starts early, doesn't it? 1 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yeah, it's one. Yeah. So it's 1 to 2:30 or 3 is the pre-show, and then you've got about an hour to get over and get in your seats, because then once the telecast starts, I mean, they can't start late. So then you get over to the Staples Center, and it's packed, and it's crazy, and we couldn't even find the red carpet, because since I was a nominee, we were allowed to, like, go down the red carpet. We couldn't even find it. It's a round building. We were on the wrong side.
You couldn't find the red carpet.
Never found the red carpet. So my wife and I, we just went inside and sat down in our seats, which were on the floor. I mean, it was pretty cool. We were a little ways back, but, you know, down in the spot, people were checking the tickets, like, ooh, all right, you go down there. And then they start the show, and the police came out, which was amazing, but also slightly surreal because people were still getting in their seats. The lights weren't even down all the way.
Yeah.
And if it had been a concert, you know, they would have closed the show. But it's a telecast, so they open it. And it's very much a TV show. I mean, if anyone watched it, it's all about the performances and keeping viewers in there because they got to get their ratings every half hour. And You know, it's not about the awards. It's about all the performances, some of which were amazing.
Yeah, there were some pretty amazing ones. Christina, she killed.
She's got to have a sore throat.
So now, when they break for a commercial, did everybody get up and start drinking?
No. Well, there's no drinking. They don't serve any alcohol. What's funny is they have most of the concessions open, so it's like going to a Laker game without the alcohol. So you can go out and get nachos. You can go get... I mean, like, in a tux, you're going to eat nachos. I don't know,
awesome.
But maybe you would.
That would have been great.
That would be great.
I would.
Bring up there with your nachos.
But so, yeah, there's a lot of milling around. And apparently, and I did not see this, apparently Paris Hilton was a seat filler. Because they have seat fillers on the floor. I mean, if we had gotten up, someone would have come and sat in our seats. So when they pan across the audience, there are no empty seats. But apparently Paris Hilton was one of the front row seat fillers.
Wow. There must have been a lot of flasks that night.
I don't know. It's early, though, too, because it's for the East Coast. So it starts at 5. And by 8:30, it's done. So I don't know. I mean, everyone seemed to be pretty, you know.
It's like you say, though. I've been a few times, and it's a TV show. Everything's stopping and starting. It's not really like being there and watching a whole performance. It really is a TV show.
And in the breaks, they're making announcements or they're showing stuff from past years and things like that. So it was quite the experience. And then from there on to a couple of parties, and it's a 14-hour day, and you don't do anything except go. So,
what parties? Any after parties? Yeah.
Well, I went to Naris. There has the Grammy party, which is you know the association that hosts it. So they've got one back in the same room that they had given out all the other Grammys earlier in the day. So that's right there. So anybody who's a nominee automatically is invited to that. And then we were able to go to the Warner Brothers party also, which was also downtown in some church with an outdoor thing and stuff. And it's all just open bar and limos and. It's pretty funny. It's a funny evening out.
There are a lot of escalades out there.
A lot of escalades.
Why? Well, hey, did you get a goodie bag?
They were offering like a really I have to be slightly negative, really lame bag of bad hair products on the way out. Like that's what I could have picked up. And Debbie and I were sort of in the line, like, oh, well, what's this? And they're. Like, oh, here, take – like, no, we don't want – no, please, we don't want one. No, really, we don't want one. So.
See, but inside the envelope was a check for $5,000.
No, it was about $1.50 worth of stuff in a big plastic box. So, no, we passed on that.
Wow, man, that sounds like
– And it would have been like a $1,000 tax hit.
Yeah, or something like that.
Is there anything taxed now?
These are not – Literally, it would have been about $5. So no, nothing taxed for that.
Wow. Well, you know, there's always next year.
Well, but they, you know, the Chili Peppers did really well.
Yes,
I think they won
did.
Four out of their six categories, including Rock Album of the Year, and so that was great. And but I'll tell you just real quickly, the best part of the whole Grammy experience was the night before. Is when they give out all of the Lifetime Achievement Awards and the Technical Grammys and the special. Any special Grammys that have been decided by Naris to give out. And with that, they have a video for each person who's going to win one. So, like, the founder of Stax Records won. The Doors, Grateful Dead, Booker T and the MGs, Maria Callas. And they have about a 5-minute video, and you get some background, and then they award it, and then the person goes up on stage and talks. And that was a really great night. And then after that is the nominees reception, which is just another party. But very nice with all of the Grammy jazz program kids playing. So lots of kids from all over the country and amazing big bands with high school kids playing. So that was really, really good. That's probably my favorite part.
And where was that held at?
That was at the Wilshire Abel Theater. It's like Wilshire and 8th, and it's about a 2,000-seat theater, and then attached to it is this beautiful reception room.
Wow.
So that was great.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, you know... Even though you didn't come home with a statue, just know that I was still living vicariously through
well,
you.
Well, I'm making my own statue, actually.
No, but so. You know what? It should give you a tremendous amount of pride. Just
it was
that
great.
That they won. And, you know, couldn't have done it without you and Ryan.
To be one of five nominees, that's pretty crazy. Yeah. So that was great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Wow. You know what?
So there you go.
That just brought up the whole Audio Nowcast. Bam. You know?
Well, let's take it back down.
Let's take it back down.
Well, hey, you know, before we get going, guys, I also wanted to talk a little bit about at the end of the last podcast, we were going to be giving away a D2 drum machine to the person that wrote in why they liked the Audio Nowcast.
You had a response?
Yeah.
Slash winner. We got one response. Response slash winner.
After I went through all the porn, you know, messages that you get in your mail. Hey, you've got like 40, and you know, 39 of them were, you know, spam.
Really?
David Crosby. Who, I don't know if you guys know his name, but David Crosby is actually, he's the guy who won the very first DMP 7. And he wrote back.
He wrote back, where's my DMP 7?
He wrote back with a haiku that I'm about to read.
Is it poetry?
It's
a Zen thing happening.
This is a little Zen thing happening for David.
Is it G-rated?
Hold hands?
So this is the winning entry on why I like the Audio Nowcast.
Can I just ask?
DMP7, disassembled on table, counting down the days. Rob is too zany. I laugh too much at his jokes. I don't get out much. That's exciting. It excites me with its sound. Yay, a good sponsor. Tantalizing prize. My haikus are terrible. I won't win this week. David Crosby.
He deserves it.
Let's give it to
David. Gets a drum machine.
He deserves it. It's very emotional, actually.
And I do promise he will soon have a horrible mixer to plug it into.
Well, congratulations.
So anyhow,
yes, congratulations.
Hey, David, well done.
And you know, Wes is the other gentleman who's waiting for the other one, and they've been troopers, and it will.
Well,
it will
what are they going to do? Let's be honest.
Right. Well, you know. Who knows?
I mean, no, it'll get there. I'm not trying to be mean about it, but
it will happen.
A component at a time.
They might not be being patient, and we wouldn't even know.
Well, that's true too. That's true too.
Patience is a virtue.
Leave it to Andrew. He has a whole new, you know, perspective on reality.
All very negative.
Well, one thing I wanted to tell you guys about is I went to go purchase some music gear this week. And since we're talking about making it in music, one of the things that everybody needs is obviously the right tools to make it in music. And I went to Guitar Center in Fountain Valley, California. And first of all, I want to tell you, and those guys are really great. I had a really good experience over at Guitar Center. And it made me think when we were talking about the NAMM show, about when Rob was saying that the music industry is really healthy, it just made me think about the fact that, you know, you got a lot of these mail order stores that are out there, but there's something to be said about dealing with a person at a music store. And I wanted to open it up to you guys right now. If any of you guys have, like, your guy that you deal with at any of the stores, it seems to me there's a lot of guys out there that are starting out that always are looking for the cheapest price and always going to some of the bigger box stores. And I just wanted to give the actual brick-and-mortar stores a really good pat on the back. And I don't know. What do you guys think about that? I mean, do you find yourself you're going to be doing more buying online, or do you like the fact that you can, you know, develop a relationship with a with a salesman? I mean, Rob.
For me, it totally depends on the kind of product. I do have relationships with stores, and it's great to know that you have people you can trust and who are knowledgeable about the gear. And you know, price is obviously very important, but it's not the only important thing. And, you know, yeah, if you're going to buy something that's just a mass market item and, you know, there are billions of them out there and you can get it cheap online and you don't need any service or support, you know, that's fine. But especially for high-end studio gear or even computer equipment, software, whatever, it's good to buy it from someone who has a clue about how to use it and, in the best-case scenario, someone who's actually used it themselves. And I've managed to find over the years a lot of good people at different stores and dealers. One of the problems, at least in L.A., is stores have a huge amount of turnover of their staff.
No, that's true.
And over the years, we've built up relationships with different salespeople at different stores, only to have them disappear after a little while. And that's been true at Guitar Center. It's been true at a lot of stores. And that's always a hard thing. But, you know, there are a lot of talented people working in stores who have one eye looking out the door for another opportunity. And if they're really if they're going to end up being talented, great salespeople, they might also be talented, great you know, musicians or producers or whatever.
Well, that's true. How many times do you buy from like the keyboard guy, and the next thing you know, it, he's on tour with so and so. You know, so well,
happens all the time
out here in Los Angeles. What about you, Andrew? Do you have a guy that you go to, or do you buy?
Well, yeah, I mean, Rob and I both get quite a bit of stuff through West LA Music.
Right. Yeah, can we put a plug in?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
Jotopia, yeah, West
Jotopia.
LA Music.
Jotopia, yes.
And now the thing about Jotopia is he does other stuff. He has a studio at home. But as far as I know, he quite enjoys the fact that he does what he does for a living, and he's been there for years, mm-hmm. and I would assume he will be there for years.
Yeah, he's our best relationship right now.
The reason... And obviously this isn't going to be the case with everybody at every store, but the great thing about Joe is there are times when I've called him up and said, hey man, I've heard great stuff about this piece of gear. What's the price and how long will it take to get? And say, you know what? You should check this other thing out. And he'll go home to his studio where he happens to have one and pull it and say, borrow it for a couple of days and check it out. But I don't think you want the thing you called me about. You should get this instead. Mm-hmm. And he's always right.
I've got his Avalon mic pre right now.
Hey, Summer, where do you buy your gear from? What's the last piece of gear you buy?
Was my guitar. I bought it at the Guitar Museum in Laguna Beach. It's just a small little shop. And it was cool because I went in there a few times before and played the guitars. And actually, that's what I liked about Guitar Center is that you can go in there and play a bunch of guitars and you sit in the room and shut the door and they don't really care and, you know.
So what did you buy? What kind of guitar?
I bought a Taylor.
Which kind?
Awesome. Gosh. I'm so bad at remembering all the kinds. Is this a bad thing?
No.
I played a Seagull before that, and then I got a Taylor, and it's just amazing. So I love it. But the Guitar Museum was awesome because the guys just let you play it, and you play all different really nice guitars, and they tell you all the different things about it, and just everything from the weight of the guitar, just the sound.
You need that when you're buying, especially an acoustic instrument.
There's nowhere to buy that online.
No.
You have to play it yourself, and just everyone plays different. So. Yeah.
Well, the instrument too, though, has to kind of settle after shipping. Also, you know, you don't know what kind of pressure the instrument was subjected to. You don't know what the conditions were. You don't know if it was hot, if it was cold. And I just find if you go to a place where you can play the instruments, it's gonna be settled. You know, mm-hmm. The moisture will have made it back in, and especially guitars, you know.
Yeah, you want to basically just walk out with the one you love. You don't want to.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand how people can spend like, you know, $3,500 on a mail order guitar.
Oh man.
And same thing with speakers. I mean, Rob and I have spent literally a full day just going and listening to speakers or listening to guitars and stuff that you got to try it all.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, we're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we are going to spend some time, and we're going to talk to Summer, and we're going to talk a little bit about making it in the music industry. So we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast, and we are honored to have with us Summer Watson. Summer, welcome to the Audio Nowcast, and we're kind of talking about making it in the music industry, and the thing about Summer is I met Summer actually through April, the producer of the Audio Nowcast, and Summer is a artist who is from Southern California, and your MySpace page is?
MySpace.com/SummerW.
There you go. Summer, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and about some of your plans and some of your goals, and just fill us in.
Okay. Well, I started playing music after I graduated, really, like, taking it seriously. Like, I would always play for my friends, just writing songs and stuff like that. And they're like, you really need to do something with this. And they booked me a show at a local bar in San Clemente, Molly Bloom's. And I played my first show there and got a bunch of people to come. Because everyone's like, what's Summer doing? She's really going to play guitar? No one really knew that's what I did, except if you're, like, really close to me or my friends. So I got a good following. And then after that, I just was kind of hooked. It just felt good, and I don't know, I just something with music and writing songs and being able to sing them and express just things that I would go through in my life had helped me, stuff with my family or relationships and stuff like that. I've never been like more a writer or a poet or anything like that, but I guess now I kind of am with songwriting, but I would write something on the guitar and then make up words on how I felt, and they kind of stuck, and I've been playing shows ever since. And I don't know, now I'm trying to take it a little bit more serious, and I recorded a demo at Sound and Studios in San Clemente. They were really nice and let me go in there and record just me and the guitar, one take, just all the way through, and then so I have kind of like a little demo from that, and then now I'm working with you and trying to do something, and mostly just playing live. I think that's the best way to get the word out and spread your music, is get as many shows as you can and just have no fear. And just right now I have a bunch of guy friends that are all awesome musicians that play in my band, and so now it's Summer Watson and the Mob Jacks. The name is like a whole long story behind that, but they're all a bunch of really good guys, and I bring just my acoustic songs to them, and I let them add whatever they feel to the music. Like, we don't really, we practice a little bit, but they're all just such good musicians that I'll just, you know, play my songs and they add what they want, and it sounds really good, and we just keep going with that. So for right now, that's what's going on.
So when I met Summer, April, who was managing Summer, actually brought her up and introduced me, and we started talking a little bit about the about some of her goals, and she had told me about, you know, a record deal that they had been offered, and to their credit, they turned them down because it was a really really bad record deal. And I wanted to bring Summer on because what we're going to do is I'm going to play a demo so that people can hear what Summer can do, I guess. But first thing we did was we just put a microphone up and we got her guitar and we played. And I'm going to play it for you guys, because what I want you guys to do is kind of, you know, Summer's going to go on this journey, you know, and we don't know where it's going to end. But I think it'd be kind of cool is if, you know, we can give her a little bit of some tips of some of the pitfalls. I mean, we've all here have been involved with music at different levels, and we're all on our different journey. And we're going to give her a little bit of advice, and we'll just keep tabs on her and kind of see how things are going to go. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to listen right now to one of her demos that we cut.
Country road, take me away. country road I just can't stay. Country road I'm leaving today. I've had a very, very long day. Country road, take me away. Country road, I just can't stay.
No, no, I just can't stay.
Country road, I'm leaving today. I've had a very, very long day. I've had a
That was Summer Watson. I feel like a DJ. Hey, that was Summer Watson.
I thought you were going to sing harmony for a moment.
So anyhow, guys, that was Summer, and literally we just popped up a tape. I mean, we popped up a mic, and it was actually a Rode, one of those NT4 stereo mics on the guitar with her Taylor built-in pickup, and the drums were a loop on a Stylus RMX, and we just kind of wanted to put something down on tape, mainly because I think the first thing you want to do is just make sure people are comfortable just recording, and then the next thing is just kind of experiment a little bit with, you know, where the song can go. But right off the bat, you know, Martin, you know, what are some of the things that not only Summer but people out there who want to make it and who've got to this level where, like, you know what, they can sing and they can actually record. What kind of advice would you give Summer?
You know, I think the way Summer was introducing herself is what it's all about. She's obviously found a magic and a passion in writing music. She loves it, and if you love something that much and you get a great feeling from it, and you find that you can express yourself, which she obviously does, is the key. And you know, passion and desire to do it is something that you can't really explain except for you just do it, and nothing would stop you doing it. And I think that's the only advice you can really give anybody at this stage is to say, you know, hold on to that. That's the thing. That's the petrol. That's the gas that keeps you going, because you love it. You know, for myself personally, when I started off, it was the radio to me back in England. As soon as I heard it, it was magic to me, and I just wanted to simulate that and emulate it. You know, I grew up with the era of the Beatles, so you know, it was like a revolution. And then you just find that you want to do what they're doing. You just want to get involved and feel the magic that music is. And I think what Summer's doing is, you know, and it sounds corny, but she's pursuing her dream, and that's what you got to do. If you love it that much and it speaks to you without really knowing why it speaks to you, but it just drives you, that's the key. You know, you can't afford to give in if you love it. That's one of the keys, is that you just got to see it through wherever it takes you. And actually, you know, nothing will stop you doing it. And I think that's you know, that's then you know that you're an artist, in the sense that whether you're doing great stuff that people understand or just you understand, that you've just got to do it. And I think what Summer was saying is, you know, she's feeling those things now.
You know what? Wow. Where did that come from?
There's a harmony note you're going for.
Yeah. One thing that, if you've spent any time, one thing that's really impressed me about you, Summer, is she writes a lot of songs. And where did that song come from? I mean, what inspires you when you write your songs? Where do your songs come from?
A lot of times I come up with the melody first on the guitar, and then whatever I feel from the melody, I go from. And that one was more just like, I don't know, I was just sitting in my house and just thinking about, I think I saw something on TV on Angelina Jolie or something, and on her traveling around and some kind of money thing. And I was just like, you know, I don't need that. Like, I sometimes you just want to have the simple things in life that make you happy. And I mean, that's just kind of how I am. Like, I'm just really organic with a lot, like, life and things. Like, I don't know. And I don't really have many stories. It just kind of comes out. I don't really, it's hard to explain my songs. They just kind of happen.
How long have you been playing guitar, Summer?
I started playing when I was like 15, but I didn't really play. I like learned a couple chords, and then I took it more seriously like probably like 4 years ago, so 4 or 5.
And do you practice every day? Do you work on your guitar every day?
I play every day, and like I try to practice. I haven't really taken lessons. I've taught myself pretty much everything I know. So I'll play different chords, and I'll look them up on the computer, and I'll try to learn. Pretty much learning other people's songs help me learn what chords I'm playing and whatnot. But I do practice every day. But
you know, one thing too is when we started working together, what really kind of impressed me about working with Summer was she was really open to the whole development, the whole artist development, because I think a lot of times people want to make it in music and they go out there a little too quick. They don't work on their songs. They don't work on their sound. They don't work on a lot of just the basics. I know, Rob, you've had some experience in developing some artists. Mm-hmm. I mean, how important is that development process? How important is that all the stuff before you get that CD?
Well, there are basically two kinds of artists, the kind for which the development process is the most important thing on earth, and the other kind that just look good enough and fit the costume and the record company can do whatever they want with them and development doesn't matter because they already look good and they're going to be has-been by the time they're 25 anyway, so it doesn't matter if they're developed because they're not going to be around long enough for anyone to care if they got developed. Artist development is something the labels used to do. We've touched on this in other shows. But now the artist has to basically do it for themselves. And it's the most important thing in the world as far as your, you know, creative development and as an artist being able to express what it is that's inside. You need to be developed. You need to take lessons. You need to study with people who do it better than you do. Not that you're going to copy their vision or their ideas, but you're just going to learn the mechanism to get those ideas out to the world. And it's a really important thing. But also, in addition to developing as an artist, as a musician or a singer, you also nowadays have to develop your own identity, your own basically marketing strategy. You have to figure out where you're going to fit into the world of music or just the world in general as an artist. All things that marketing departments for labels used to worry about for you, and they still do for a few artists, but, you know, it's not enough nowadays to have a MySpace page or, you know, a public website that people can go to because everybody has one. So there has to still be a hook. There still has to be something that's unique about you as an artist. You have to have an identity and your own artistic vision. And so while you're developing your talents, you have to be developing that identity also, because there's just a sea of noise out there. And if you want to poke through that noise, there has to be something unique. It has to be a unique sound or a unique look or a unique dance move or unique anything. It doesn't really matter what it is. But it just has to be unique and figuring out, well, some people don't have to figure out how to be unique just because they are unique. Other people have very cleverly come up with something unique. It doesn't matter how you get to that finish line, but to be heard, you know, we've talked before about how easy it is for people to record their own demos and how much music is still being made out there. And even though the record industry may be falling apart, the music business is very solid because there's so many people making music. Well, it's good and bad. If you want to be heard, you got to be doing it better or louder or more uniquely than anybody else out there.
You know, speaking of good music, and a lot of good music is Andrew, your website has the best music on it. I don't know.
You're about to get flooded with hits from both our listeners.
All two of them. Yeah, they don't handle it.
No, but there's some amazing music that's on your website.
It's all just unsigned people I've worked with, either mixing or producing or
whatever. What's happened to, I mean, why didn't they get signed? I mean, you don't have to be specific. But
yeah, I mean, there are myriad reasons. I mean, one of the bands had been signed, and then we did a few songs because they were thinking about trying to get re-signed, and then it just didn't happen. Another one had very high power management, and there were some deals on the table, and they left them behind thinking there'd be something better. And of course, there is nothing better necessarily.
Right.
And so that one just been sitting. There are a couple of sort of world music things on the site, which are things I did myself like 10 years ago for a CD-ROM project that never came out. So, I mean, it just, there are a million reasons why something could not come out. You know, especially if you try to go the traditional route through labels and things like that. But
wow, that's kind of doom and gloom.
Well, I think really what it does is it points out what we were saying earlier about how the only reason to do it is because you can't do anything else. I mean, and it's what I say to – I've taught a couple classes at UCLA Extension in engineering, and it's what I say to them also. Do not become a musician or an engineer because of the glamour. Because, look, first of all, you'll get nominated for a Grammy and you won't even be able to find the red carpet. So there's no Grammy. The glamour is gone. You have to do it. And then if you can manage to make a living at it, well, I mean, fantastic. You know, I'm unbelievably lucky to be successful at what I do. But I would be doing it anyway. It mm-hmm. wouldn't matter.
Right.
Because I couldn't not do it. And that's
but
really
your
important.
Wouldn't be nearly as
No, because I'd be living in their basement.
There's another thing we can bring up here as well, you know, particularly in reference to what Summer's doing is you know, we've talked about, you know, being unique and everything, but songs are really important.
Absolutely.
You know, and we're talking
songs
about...
Songs are everything.
Yeah, we're talking about music. So, you know, with Summer, I'm sure she's developing her songs. And, you know, and I think as an artist that's starting off, they have to be aware, as I was as a writer, that you're going to write rubbish, and then you're going to write one good one, then rubbish, and people are going to tell you that it's not good and not strong, and you're going to get, as Rob said, guidance from people that have got good hearts, that have done it before, and have said, you know, think of this, try that, try the middle eight, check this out. And, you know, you have to develop, again, what Rob was saying, skill at what you do. And if you're someone like Summer who puts her emotions and passions out in her songs, she has to always be aware that she's going to be, you know, always trying to strive to write a better song. So for everybody who's starting, you know, you have to look at the song. Even if you're an artist who doesn't write, you have to be aware that you don't write and that you'll be looking for material that is strong to suit you. And that you can perform and sing the best you can. So the song is, you know, it's everything revolves around that.
Yeah, kind of. That's the product, you know,
mm-hmm.
that you're selling.
And I think it was a really good thing that she said earlier about how she's playing other people's songs, and that's hugely important because mm-hmm. you don't get the sound of certain chord changes or turnarounds or ways to get to a chorus mm-hmm. necessarily from yourself. You'll get them by playing someone else's songs, and you'll get to a certain part in the song, go, my God, that's great, and that little. Yeah. Tidbit then becomes part of your repertoire.
It's inspiration.
Yeah.
How many songs have you written?
Actually, I just wrote them down the other day. 25 so
wow.
far.
So. Wow. And I'm sure you have stronger songs. Can you edit yourself?
Yeah. Well, some songs I write. I'll obviously do the melody first, and then I'll write the song, and I'll kind of just freestyle sing it, and I'll record it on my laptop. And I'm like, oh, that kind of sounds good, but it really has no meaning behind it. Like, it's just kind of just like a freestyle words that felt good that I sang while I played and I kept it.
Yeah, like you scat.
And then there's other songs that are more like deep feeling that I've actually like sat down and wrote and like erased and then, you know, really took time to, you know, open like a story, you know, out of it. So I don't know. It's hard for me to judge my songs. There are some songs I like to play better than the others that I feel like might not have the stronger lyrics, and then there are songs that I feel have better lyrics that are harder for me to play. I don't know. It's hard to explain. And it's
now let me one thing I want to say too is Summer plays a lot live, and she has a really good live following, and if you go to her MySpace page, you'll always see people commenting on your shows. Let's talk a little bit about playing live right now and some of the pitfalls and some of the things. You've told me some stories about, you know, hassle trying to book and the hassle, you know, trying to get into places, because it seems like there's like a double-edged sword, because some people want you to have this following before you get booked, but how do you get the following?
I think the hardest thing about getting booked is that if you just want to get booked at a bar, then, you know, it's a lot easier. But if you want a good venue, they want you to have a big press kit. And the most important thing is they want you to have a demo or like a produced CD that they can listen to. And a lot of times when I'm playing with my band and all I have is my little demo with just me and the guitar, you know, they have no idea what I sound like, and they don't want to book someone, and they don't know what the following I have or anything like that. And I mean, these people at the venues don't know my following just by checking MySpace, you know. It's just, and that was good having April represent me, because then, you know, she was like, well, she has a good following, she played at Coach House, we packed the place, like, you know, we just have to, it's all kind of word of mouth and luck. I mean, without a demo or something that they can go, oh, we like her, so we'll book her because of that. We like the sound.
April, what were some of the pitfalls that you came across while you were booking Summer?
You said is a lot of venues, I was trying to get her playing not just in our little bubble, but trying to branch out and get a fan base other places. And like she said, the venues would be kind of hesitant on that because they don't know if she has a following in their area or what. So I was pretty much sending out a bunch of emails just trying to get her booked wherever I could and sending them. We had a few recordings of the band live, so I'd try and have them listen to that just to get a feel of how it is different from her acoustic songs. So it was pretty much just staying in contact and staying up with venues, just emailing constantly to try and get booked. And we did. We got some shows in L.A. We went up north. We played in San Luis Obispo and did like a little road trip. We've played a lot of venues in L.A., like Viper Room, Pitcher House in Hermosa Beach.
Tangier Lounge.
Just trying to kind of broaden the Orange County bubble, like trying to get outside of that. And, yeah, we have all of the following and fans there, but we want to try and, you know, branch out. And I think what we found was really helpful was making friends with other bands in different cities that have a following. So when we went to San Luis Obispo, we ended up playing with another band up there, and they can come down here and play with us and vice versa. And then that way we're kind of like gaining more fans. And we did. We had a great show in San Luis Obispo. We sold a lot of CDs with her website and MySpace on there, and just kind of getting her songs and music out there and creating an awareness. So
how important do you think, guys, live performances nowadays? To me, it seems like it's even more so important because you're doing your own promotion.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the radio now, you know, because there's only the big K-rock sort of part of radio. I mean, if we're talking for popular rock music, not pop R&B.
Sure.
So you basically have that network of stations, then you have college radio, and that's it. So if you're not going to be in one of those two, you need to be playing live, because that's the only way people are going to find you.
I will say, just because how do I put this?
Talk about this, you just bite your tongue.
Well, a lot of people don't know. I did develop an artist over the course of 4 to 5 years. Who did end up getting a major label deal and
deal. I mean, deal at a major label.
This was taking a young singer from the ground and training and training and training and developing and writing songs and bringing in
dance lessons, vocal lessons,
acting lessons, superstar writers. I mean, this was as correct as you can do this. And it's still too early to go into details about it because his album isn't out yet. But I've been through the process, and with just the exact success that you're aiming for, you know, the major label deal. And I learned so much. I mean, I knew a lot going into it. I went into it with my eyes open, and the development went great. But, you know, the basic bottom line, if you're signed to a major label, they're basically interested – in your single. And if you come to them with a song that's strong enough and they think they're going to make a lot of money, they don't care if you can sing it live. If they're looking at your whole career as one single, which the artist never wants to admit that's how they're being viewed, but that is the truth. That is how they're being viewed. it's very different than if you're going after an independent deal and trying to really become an artist with, you know, live following and everything else. But if you have a single, one song, and you can take it to a label and it's a smash, you know, it's like Hey Ya from Outkast or something, you know, it's like totally off the wall. If some label executive thinks it's going to be a smash, you'll get a deal. They don't care if you can perform it live. It might be a song that's impossible to perform live. It might be some weird studio trickery kind of song. But if it's a gimmick and it's going to make some money, you can get what you think is a major label deal and a career started. And guess what? As soon as that song is over, you are too.
Well, I think that's the difference between fame and artistry.
Oh, it's a huge difference.
I mean, some people want to be famous. They don't care how they're going to do it. They just want that glory, that fame, that perception of whatever that is. And other people just kind of do their thing and they're true to what they want to be, and then they become famous.
Well, it's the American Idol society that we live in. The one thing that kind of, you know, the American Idol, it's entertaining and it's good to see the singers, but there's just real, you know, they're singing other people's songs and it just, I don't know, it's more personality driven, I think.
Well, it was one of the things I liked the least about the Grammy telecast was a show that's there to honor the best of the music business for that year. And other than the best new artist, it's generally pretty established people and stuff like that. Yet there was an American Idol type competition where you would log in and vote for who was going to sing with Justin Timberlake. And it's sort of like, well, what are we doing here? And that's when, you know, I just realized, okay, it's a TV show and it's fine. It doesn't matter. It is about the ratings,
well, like,
and it
said,
worked.
The hilarious part. The award show was at the beginning. The TV show was at the end.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was hilarious how completely identical the three girls sounded, too. I mean, it was completely interchangeable.
And it was almost scary. I mean, a very competent singer. I'm not going to go and say she's a great singer. But her stage presence was ridiculous. To be sitting in the front row, not even knowing if you're going to do it, and then, all right, get up there and do it, and be doing all the moves and the choreography and the – it was kind of spooky.
Well, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever seen Nashville Star. Have you ever watched that program? Mm-hmm. It's the country version of American Idol. And I haven't watched a lot, but I saw one episode where they actually had to write a song. And I was just, you know, I have way more respect for that because I think, you know, just having the whole package, that doesn't mean, you know, I'm anti, you know, people that can sing or American Idol, because let's face it, songwriters need all the venues they can get. But still, there's just something about not focusing on that, you know, personality-driven American Idol.
But it also depends on the style of music. I mean, that a lot of the music that you're working on now is a much more personal type of music. Where you look at country, it's a lot more personal. It's not about the dance moves. It's not about a lot of the glitz, and it's not about a lot of things. But in certain kinds of music, it's essential. You have to have it. Other music, you don't. And I think that you just got to find your audience and wherever they are, the people that would like it, the people that are going for that type of music, and then go as far as it'll take you And I think stay true to what you're trying to reach out. I mean, my feeling is I come from the film side. And my feeling is some people, like, sometimes in music, you could watch people do what they do, but you're not involved. You get to see the show, but you're always the audience. And that's kind of cool. Other types of music is all about reaching out into the audience, tickling them in some emotional way, making them remember some, bringing something out about them. And I think your music has the tendency or possibilities of being that kind of music. So as long as you're always thinking about, you're watching the audience and seeing, are you connecting? Are you grabbing them? Are you taking them someplace? Then people always want to see you because they feel good listening to your music. And of that style, in my opinion.
All right. Well, you know what? We're almost running out of time here. But before we go, really quick, guys, let's give some advice to Summer. Rob, if you were going to just be able to give Summer some advice, what would you know? Let's give just a little nugget of wisdom from here.
A nugget of wisdom. Let me think. Well, I don't really know what what your end goal is. And I guess my advice when you're starting out is to figure that out, because you have to be working towards a goal. I mean, if the goal is just to become a great guitar player and singer and that's enough, then that's a great goal. But if the goal is to have a career in the business, it's very important to figure out what you're going to represent to the business. Not that you have to say, well, you know, I want to be a cross between Mary J. Blige and, you know, whatever, you know, Norah Jones meets Mary J. Blige or something. You know, people always do those kinds of crazy comparisons where it's like, well, there is no way to intersect those two things. But figure out, sometimes it's good to be able to describe yourself as how you'd relate to other artists who are out there, because as soon as you're trying to sell your music or sell yourself for a live gig or whatever, it's good to be able to say, well, she's like, you know, whatever, Norah Jones, only more soulful, or, you know, just whatever comparisons. It's good to be able to start to encapsulate, if you're trying to make money as an artist, it's good to be able to encapsulate what your goals are and to kind of define what you're going to represent to the industry. And it gives you something to work towards.
Andrew?
Oh, good God. Mm-hmm. Well, specifically, I'd cut the intro of that song in half, get to the vocal a little quicker.
Yes, demos should have really, really, really short intros, or no one will ever hear your vocal.
There is no demos anymore. There's just the song that you can demo.
Well, that's true, too.
I don't know. I mean,
you must
I think
have something
it's
more profound than that, Andrew.
No, I guess.
That's good.
It's
a good
point. It's just a combination of everything we've been saying. I mean, I think to be very true to yourself as a writer, but then also bringing up a question to our esteemed songwriter colleague here, is that at what point do you as an artist conflict or not with you as the person trying to be commercial with what you're doing? Because obviously when you're writing songs, especially for other people, it would help if they're successful, because otherwise you're not going to be writing songs for other people anymore.
Sure, yeah.
So how do you balance that? And
well, I mean, you're going straight over to me now.
Sorry.
No.
I make him digress.
That was good.
You know, I personally came from a place where, as I said before, I was just an enthusiast for records. You know, 45s back then in the 60s and 70s. So I just wanted to write songs. Although I played in bands as a bass player, I soon realized that the strength of my band getting a deal was on the strength of the songs, and so. I started to learn how to write songs. And as Andrew said, I bought songbooks, and I would play the Elton John songs, I'd play the Genesis songs, Peter Gabriel songs, and as I was playing those songs, I would learn the chords, and then another song would appear. And I think for me personally, and this is just my story, is I came through writing songs for other people and then found my own voice. And people that I wrote for said, you know, we heard your demos, you've got your own thing, why don't you try it? And I was lucky in a situation to have had enough success where I could spend time in my own studio releasing, you know, writing songs for myself. And that was wonderful, and that's what I do now. And it was all an apprenticeship. But I've been lucky enough to hear Summer with you Mike, playing some songs just with her guitar, not the song that was just played. And I think she has a very, very unique voice. I don't think that Summer's found exactly what she is yet. I don't think she understands arrangements totally yet. I don't think that she understands, you know, where middle eights or bridges should necessarily be. But and I've heard some songs that myself I feel that were even stronger than the one that was on this tape, you know. And playing to drum machines and things, I'm not sure that that's the way that it would really, really suit her at the beginning. I'm just being brutal about it. Love the character of her voice. Just think that it's, you know, it's a matter of an apprenticeship, and just if her enthusiasm and her dedication is, as I can tell, is there, it would be a matter of just developing. It's just that word we said, developing. And with a great manager, which she's got with April, who really believes in her, which is another thing that should really be emphasized, is it's great to find somebody who really believes in you, you know, who is a friend and is passionate about what you do and not about, you know, making money off you, but is just into the music, into what you do. And that's really important. And obviously, April's that. And it's a matter of time. It's a matter of having that real length of time. And you don't get anything without pursuing it, pursuing it, pursuing it. And it could take 2 years, could take 1 year, could take 5 years, you know. And again, listen to the people that you really love, you know, whoever influences you, realize that they're great. You know, I mean, you look at Joni Mitchell, and she had something so unique and so special. And it's worthwhile looking at the masters and just going, well, they've got something. I'd like to just, you know, take a little bit from that. Influences are great. Inspiration is great from other people. And I think, you know, when I've heard Summer singing, and I've been lucky enough to hear her sing live, I think there's a tremendous amount of character and truthful, particularly in the first songs I heard. Not so much this track. I didn't get this so much. I found this, you know, not arranged properly, and didn't feel like what I'd heard before. Yeah, and I'm just saying that because I'm into you, you know, and I've heard the other tracks, and I felt more the ones you played on your own without any rhythm and not pushing it was just like there was a gut feeling there, and there was blood there. With this, it just felt a little bit forced. But I've heard you sing, you know, your early songs, and I love the character of your voice. But the biggest thing with me would be just keep going and keep getting better, and all of a sudden somebody's going to hear that one track and go like, oh, I just love that song, and you'll be off, you know. But can't afford to just not keep going naively at it, you know. I mean, I failed so many times and still am failing. I mean, that's the truth, though. It is, you know. I'm playing songs in the car now, you know, for a record after the one I'm doing now, and you're just going, I know I can do better than that. I wasn't inspired with that, and that's been after 20 years. So it's a long walk up the staircase, and then all of a sudden, you know, I would say this is an interesting thing. You know, I wrote these Dreams for Heart, which was number one, and that took 10 minutes to write, luckily with a lyric from Bernie Taupin, and that was a big success. And I had another success with my own song, In the House of Stone and Light, that took 6 months to write. So there's absolutely no rules except for I was in the room doing it. I kept on coming back and doing it. You have to keep coming back and doing it. And you don't know when the jewel is going to appear. But you do get better. There's no doubt you get better at editing yourself, understanding the rules, and then you can break the rules. You know, if you listen to someone like Bob Dylan, it's in him now. It wasn't early on. He was Woody Guthrie at the beginning. Now, he's broken all the rules because he's been doing it such a long time. And you know, you do get better without even knowing it because you keep doing it.
Don't hold back, Martin.
I won't. it's about reality radio.
No, that's great.
I'm into Summer. I like what she does, no. So it's not worth pissing about. You know, you have to get it right.
No, that's true. Well, I will tell you that the drum machine on that song was basically just put it in there because just to keep some tempo.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
One thing with demos, though, if you ever feel you have to explain something on a demo, then you're screwed. Because you're never always going to be there. You should be able to play it, and it is what it is. And if it's like, well, you know, the drum machine or what, and if you got to explain it, you can't do it.
And you know, that brings up a good point, too. And when we say demo, and just that I'm apologizing for that demo, but when I say demo in general, you have to understand that was, and you know, the people out in the podcast that are listening too, you're going to record your song a ton of times and that tape goes nowhere. That's not even for release. That's basically so that you can understand, you know, what your song's all about, so you can have something to critique yourself with, to make sure, hey, you know, yeah, this is the right mic. Yeah, this is the right arrangement. No, I need to work on this. And, you know, Summer was gracious enough to allow us to have one of those demos, which is, you know, it's going to be the first and last time that'll be out there. But seriously, I want to, you know, a lot of people will start recording their demo and they'll just fall in love with that demo and they'll never think to like start all over, you know, and I'm sure, Andrew, I'm sure you've come across that before where you've
Oh, absolutely. But it's really, really important to record the songs because yes, it's impossible to listen while you're playing. You have to record it and play it back. And with bands I work with, every single one of them, 10 minutes after I'm there, has a way to record their rehearsals. And now I go back to work with bands I've been working with for a little while, and we don't even talk about it when they're done playing because they want to hear it so that we've all heard it, as opposed to they play it and then I talk. Like, they stop playing, we hit stop, we hit play, listen back, and then we can talk about the song, and there's no question.
Mm-hmm. And how many hours, you know, like when you were working with U2, I mean, how many hours of tape did you burn through to get to what you finally
we filled up 8 250 gig drives in 13 days on 3 songs.
Wow.
And, you know, it's still a 4.5 minute song.
Wow. So, so we just want to encourage everybody out there that when you start, the first thing, just record everything.
Yeah, it's so easy to record now. There's no excuse. You don't need a good mic. I mean, take the mic that came with your computer and just record, and you'll get a sense of it. I mean, there are Stones tunes that are off of a little cassette Walkman that are on their albums. It doesn't have to be audiophile to check it out.
Well, Summer, there you go. Thank you very much for joining us and just for opening up. And we're going to check on Summer and the progress of everything as it goes through. And
could I just jump in here and also say that what Summer's done is very brave.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the things that will break you through, because you're willing to, you know, open your soul and let people like us idiots talk about you. But that's very brave. And that's what it takes, you know. So
and a thick hide. So, I mean, all of us here, I mean, I knew that when we all started in our different professions, 1,000 people told us how we're not going to make it. Yeah. It's not going to do this. It's not going to happen. You should do this. Take the easy route. Be an engineer, computer programmer, blah, 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 blah. Everyone's going to say it. And in some ways, it all translates into either a long tone or you just don't hear it. Or you hear it and you don't care. You've got to have the hide and a little bit of craziness to go into this industry. It's definitely a profession, and you've got to learn things along the way. But there's got to be a part of you that says, I don't care. I don't care. You can say it. Everyone's going to tell me I'm not going to make it. I do not care. You have to do it. It's watching what are the animals that run off the cliff?
Lemmings.
Lemmings. You know, and it's almost that crazy that all of us, when we came out, when I look back at some of the stuff that I did. I went, what possessed me to do, you know, to do those things? I wasn't thinking. I was crazy. And you've got to be that way. And I think that you got to have a thick hide and not care. You just have to do it.
You know, I realized that Lemmings came to my mind just that quick. And last time I couldn't remember didgeridoo. What's up with that? All right. Well, hey, listen, we got to wrap this up. But thanks a lot, Summer, and good luck. And I'll be probably seeing you next week when we continue this whole odyssey. All right, guys. Well, before we go, anybody have any announcements, anything they want to talk about, anything they want to plug?
When are the Emmys for Bobby? Isn't that coming up?
That's right, Bobby.
For Bobby?
That's right. Bobby, why don't you tell us? He's actually been here the whole time.
Yeah, you never keep him that quiet.
That's right.
Are the Dixie Chicks up for an Emmy?
And I know, once again, Martin, you're still working your album's getting close.
We're close. We're very near. But the final ingredients are being put into place. And so I'm very near, too.
Yeah, and I just want to plug it. On a future podcast, too, we're going to talk about some of the promotion stuff that Martin's about to get into and really help people even take it even to the next level, because he has an album, it's ready to go, and now he's going to release it on the internet and going to be doing some sales, and it's going to be really interesting to see how that does. I bet that's kind of scary,
too. So what you should do...
The naked photographs will be...
Take your album on The Apprentice. Have each team figure out who can sell the most popular albums.
Yeah, really. You know what? I actually do have one thing I should plug. I think I mentioned it a bunch of podcasts ago, but it's still worth mentioning. There's a documentary called Before the Music Dies.
Right.
That we mixed at my place. I didn't have anything to do with producing the thing. I just mixed it. But it's an amazingly insightful look at the music business, where it is now and what it takes to develop an artist and be an artist. And there are a lot of great people in it, like Erica Badu and Eric Clapton and just a ton
only
of people.
Only people whose names start with Eric.
Exactly. I can't think of anyone else, but there were a lot of people in it. It's called Before the Music Dies, and it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
right on this topic.
Hey, I wanted to, before we go too, I want to read one more email that I got from
one more
from a Jason Lowenstein. It says, now that I've spent 21 plus hours listening to you guys, it has become obvious that I really enjoy your show. It only took him 21 hours for him to like our show.
Oh, I've got to take my hat off to that guy. Well, he's a star.
Now that we've spent 10 seconds listening to his email, I've decided we like him too.
We love it.
He deserves a medal, though, doesn't he? Really?
Maybe a digital mixer.
Yes.
No, or a good cushion for a seat.
He goes on and says, I really hope that you keep it up and I appreciate what you guys are doing. Do you all have an email list that announces when new episodes are available? It's going to be on MySpace. That's the best place to find out what's happening with the Audio Nowcast, which is MySpace/AudioNowcast. If so, please sign me up so we can sign you up that way. Thanks a lot, Jason Lowenstein. And I just had to give that guy a shout-out for it because 21 hours.
Wow.
Man. Yeah,
he didn't say in a row. But
yeah, but can you think about it? 21 hours. That's, wow.
I don't listen to me that much.
I think that's more than what some of all the panels have been here for.
Yeah. Did I say so?
I don't think my parents have listened to me for 21 hours of my life.
Probably seemed like 21 hours.
All right, well, let's wrap this up. So if you guys have any questions or comments, you know, you can always reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. All right, well, from all the guys, we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Apex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.